Member of Parliament, also 27 May 2018. We continue with passive oral questions. We commence with question number 404, the annual item thinking. Further to the supplementary questions answered to question 542 2017, can the government advise the balances of community care money held in savings bank for the following dates, being the 30th of June 2014, 30th of June 2015, 30th of June 2016, and the 30th of June 2017? I'm from the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GSP. I will also put them together with question 405 to 411. Question number 405, the annual item thinking. Can the government advise the monetary value of government deposits in the savings bank for the following day? 30th of April 2017, 31st of May 2017, 30th of June 2017, 31st of July 2017, 31st of August 2017, 30th of September 2017, 31st of October 2017, 31st of November 2017, 31st of December 2017, 31st of January 2018, and the 28th of February 2018. Question number 406, the Honourable Adam Clinton. And if you're trying to provide the total growth debt, as a good debt off application on the pension fund to growth debt, cash reserve and net debt figures for public debt, for the following date being 1st of January 2018 and the 1st of February 2018. Question number 407, the Honourable Adam Clinton. Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise the total liquid reserve figure as constituent, namely consolidated fund, improvement and development fund, government owned company, deposit, contingency, and other funds, in the 1st of January 2018 and the 1st of February 2018. Question number 408, the Honourable Adam Clinton. Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise how total liquid reserves are invested in health, giving detailed World Bank savings bank accounts and cash flow for foreign debt from the 1st of January 2018 and the 1st of February 2019. Question number 409, the Honourable Adam Clinton. Mr. Speaker, can the government advise the balance on the general sinking fund as at the 1st of January 2018 and the 1st of February 2018? Question number 410, the Honourable Adam Clinton. Mr. Speaker, can the government advise what plans it has which are telephone to expand into other countries? I'm for the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GSP. Mr. Speaker, the value of the question for community care would be savings bank cannot be provided. The monetary value of the government deposits for the savings bank on the date requested are as follows: April, 296,827,170. May, 292,117,177. June, 287,255,500. July, 282,624,500. August, 276,139,990. September, 292,230,272. October, Midway 1.193. November, 318 million, 107.745. December, 273 million, 615.257. January, the 267 million, 127.589. February, 260 million, 446.189. The figure requested for the 1st of January are gross debt, 447.7 million, sinking fund, 5.2 million, aggregate debt, 442.5 million, cash, 94 million, net debt, 348.5 million. And the equivalent for February is gross debt, 447 million, 447.7 million, consider. Sinking fund 5.2 million, aggregate debt 442.5 million, cash 118.2 million, net debt 342.3 million. The position of the debt will total liquid assets composition, when, where, and how these are invested in a particular date, certain by the number of assets, continues to be as previously stated. Any plans that this telecom may or may not have to expand into other countries will be made public if and when this telecom considers it commercially desirable to do so. May I ask the Minister to accept the last figure of the day, not to be said, 322.3 million, is it 322 or 320? 324.3. I'm speaking about the stress. There was a while I digest the answers from the Honourable Minister. What? No, okay. If I can check this as well, in respect to telecom, we did make an announcement at the Commonwealth Telecommunications conference called in Gibraltar, that we are looking to expand elsewhere into other countries, I suppose. Can you give any kind of indication as to what the full process is, or what kind of level investment you may be thinking of? that would be the context in which I would have said that. And I think I've read for 2 minutes if we want it. If I can bring back to the question, the answer to the question 404, the next study would be information requests that cannot be provided. I'd be grateful to explain why the question said several answers to the previous question in respect of Canadian suppliers' investment. I quote, the historical position has always been that Canadian suppliers' deposit is surplus funds in the savings bank. That is what has always been done. I'd be grateful, because we're not going to explain why you're trying to give us the balances of Canadian suppliers at those points in time, or even perhaps the potential to be offered as they have for the savings bank. I assume that Canada is responsible for the savings bank, and not because I am the one who set Community Care Act in 1989. And I would say that what Community Care has done traditionally, but I have to tell you that the savings bank program specifically prohibits making public information about the deposit of any one of the depositors. And I would have said that if he comes from the bank, I don't think the bank would keep many customers in when he was in his bank. If he went around practicing the accounts of people without their prior consent. So the amount that any customer has in the savings bank is not something that any official can provide for me. So when I make it public, and if that happens, in fact, it would be an offense which is punishable by a fine at $35. Perhaps if I don't match my value, I don't remember not about the risk being fined at $35 to be written before my city.
I appreciate what Minister said, but can I ask you this? Given that historically the money was the savings bank, and even perhaps you haven't mentioned that, you may still be liable to find a scale price if you disclose it ahead of time with savings bank. But that still has been pretty wonderful in his report of March 2014, he wrote the story that you need to care about money with the savings bank. And can I just advise the House as to the future, and so in the past, that has been the savings bank? But then we can start to have a raise of expectation in the future that the money will be in the savings bank.
So the Renewable Member wrote an article recently in which he was saying that he was going to spend a lot of time looking into the Community Care Act. I have already pointed out to him in the answer that I gave him to the question that he's referring to, that the question of Community Care has always been accepted in this parliament as being an independent thing which we don't debate in parliament. And it has been done by this research, which we mentioned in the article, and surprised that he missed the research as to why it is that the accounts are not brought to the House. They are not brought to the House because they were stopped by the greatest living libertarian. And when he stopped it, and he told me in the House that they were stopping it because it was not in the public interest that it should happen, I accepted it without question. So I suggest that he goes back and looks at that argument because his party in power told me that it was better not to discuss the matter in this House, and I accepted it. And I told him that the level of information that I used to get and the level of information that I had in government and in opposition, and that is the level of information that he's going to get from me or from anybody else.
And I think I will ask this one final supplementary on this. Can you advise the House how it is that you can assert that Community Care has reserved £100 million in what it describes as a rainy day fund as of March 2015, and yet the audited accounts are less than available on June 2014? How can you be so sure that can declare over 100 million.
So people are aware of that. But who does it matter if it means the notion that any customer was selling myself in the country? I am not going to be very aware to be 100% accurate in what we put in the manifesto or in the public statement today. If that was so, your honorable member would be in court every day of the week.
Well, Mr. Speaker, given that the government wrote someone down about the fact that it has these rainy day funds, just being one of them, can the honorable minister at the very least tell you that that rainy fund remains intact within the Gibraltar Savings Bank and has not been used for the purposes of any type of government projects, government expenditure? Directly, or that is also indirectly for government projects and government expenditure.
We don't manifest what the character that was the money that we have, and I'm not here to give explanations or answers about what the charity that was expanding. And we should know that, because we were in the government before, when that was the position of the government in which we sat as a minister. And the position was that we would have community care after GSLP up to 1995, the money for rental of a settlement, which the GSLP inherited, and not at the very low time, by stopping giving them any money, and the money that would have gone to the community care charity was diverted to other uses. And for 15 years, they did that, and it was the result provided by the GSLP administration that kept the charity going for 15 years. At the end of it, they revealed that there had been a deliberate policy to get rid of the charity. Since when he became leader of the opposition, said that was no longer a policy. I'm not sure whether it's a policy under the new leader of the opposition, and whether it will be the same policy under the new leader of the party, who will eventually presume that it has to be one or the other, and they were going to get rid of it, and they intended to win the very government, or they're not going to get rid of it when he was leading the party. But I am not here to answer questions on community care, or I can tell you I'm a board member, is that we provided enough money to them by the last election to enable them to build that money there. And I can tell you that traditionally, that is where they kept the money. And that is the amount of information I provided, and I'm not willing to provide any more. Mr. Speaker, but you must accept that the government is answerable to this House for any use of money in terms of government expenditure and for government projects. And you see, he has criticized the GSP, as he has done now, the GSP government. So on the one hand, what he says is, you did not invest in community care, and you diverted the money that you should have invested in community care into government projects and government expenditure. That is wrong. But what is happening here? I don't know. I am asking the question. I'm asking for him to dispel that. But if that is happening here, is that he's putting the money in community care, that then from community care into still being used to fund government projects and government expenditure, well, that is pretty important. In fact, it's certainly doing it in a different way. That the outcome is exactly the same. And I just want to do that. I want him to assure his house that that is not the difference. If he does, then of course I want to check it.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, that is right. Not only would he accept it, but it would have had me accepting that he's entitled to ask my question about community care and what best with his money, and establish a precedent that I'm here to give answer to a question I have met. And I can tell him that my criticism is not just because they use the money for something else, which we are perfectly entitled to do. It's because they promised to do the opposite. It's because they put in this house that they stopped giving him money because the revenue from the money that we had left was sufficient
to meet the recurrent expenditure of the charity. But at the moment that there was insufficient revenue, insufficient investment revenue, they would not allow the charity to have to dip into its reserve, whatever they were invested, in order to meet recurrent spending. That is what they said. And having said that, here in Parliament, categorically and as clearly as I'm saying it, and having been repeatedly in an election campaign, it was all before the Duncan, they then revealed in 2010, when they were there, that the running down had been a deliberate policy going on since 1996, so that when the receipts were completely accepted, community care would be closed down and the payment to pension would be paid through the social security system. And in fact, it was said that this would be done because it had been delayed after the 2011 election. So these two are the candidates on a platform of replacing community care, having committed publicly in public elections and committed in parliament to the deficit policy. And that's why I'm entitled to this. Not because in government you can decide to do something with your revenue that would be thought you were doing because you think you've been a sort of voter, what they could do. But what they couldn't do is they know that they were doing it and that's what they were doing. So we stood. I am not prepared to tell you, and therefore I am not prepared to tell this Parliament, and I am not prepared to tell the people of Zimbabwe whether the abundant medium, raising funds in community care, is being spent on government projects and on government expenditure. And the people of Zimbabwe will let us see judgment at the length of time, together with all the other answers and all the other information that this government has failed to provide this Parliament to the people of Zimbabwe. But all of these things, this raising the money or the money in community care is kept as part of that central pooling of money, whether it's treasury, you may recall our discussions in terms of credit finance and as a growth investment holding, this is all part of one central pool of money, and this community care of money form part of that central pool. I think what the people of Gibraltar will come to a conclusion of is that the members opposite are still intending to build a community care. Because the very reason that was given when they were defending it, which was in 1996, when they stopped publishing accounts and stopped giving information, was to protect it. And of course, they're not remotely interested in protecting it anymore. And I'm telling you that we should know the answer to the question that is asking them. And that by putting the question that is putting, people want to get a clue about the government's analysis or anything else in all the questions and all the analysis made. Because that there was a possibility that there was some lobby to his contract, it would imply that the entire $1 billion of the savings bank is part of the pool. So that's the answer to the question. And if you don't even understand that, very well, I'll do that. Well, I don't remember the deficit, yeah. I don't think the answer. But let me ask a simple question. I think we can get better with this question. Can you at least say that the money belonging to community care are kept segregated by the Gibraltar Savings Bank? The law says I cannot give that information. That's the first thing that happens. But I need to quote the recording contact. Mr. Speaker? And second contact is the correction of the question that says that the name of the defendant, the area of the defendant, may not be revealed. Why are there several conditions to assign at the level of five of the standard state? I think it's going to be to reveal that a statement today communicates to the defendant of the savings bank and that the money of the defendant of the savings bank is a quantity of given money or how it's been used in the bill. And the basic question was, is the money of the defendant of the savings bank part of the pool of the government money, where look, the deficit in the savings bank has deficited £1 billion. If the £1 billion is part of the pool would have to be more than £1 billion. Because by the right of simple arithmetic, you cannot put a bigger thing into a smaller one. The pool is less than £1 billion. Well, thank you very much to the Minister for that answer. We need a key to represent the court. Let's be consistent. What I'm going to be reading out, because I represent them on a pro bono basis, okay?
I'm going to ask you this.
You may not be aware that his company case in the United Kingdom, in which is a retiree who received money from government, and then that charity put on record criticism for the way that money was used. Now, Parliament still had an obligation to at least follow up on how public money is being expended, and certainly there's a whole select committee hearing on that. But it doesn't seem much of rule that this place, this Parliament, has an interest in how a charity is expending 190 million, certainly since 2011, that has been granted to that charity by this House, and that we have a legitimate interest to ask questions about how that money is invested.
So this is not about any alternative. This is about a charity we want to come out to protect the vote of themselves whose livelihood was up and afloat, all of them getting around the divided history. And that was the reason why the then chief minister said, we mustn't do a full meeting in this house that would enable people who would be listening to make difference in the matter on behalf of the value of representative team. And that was the reason why he said, although I said I was going to publish records when I was in opposition, now that I'm clean, I decided that I'm not going to publish records. I'm assuming that if I go back to that, that all the research is done, and you need that book of every single lesson done. It is nonsense. So let's answer this question. I don't know what the people are talking about, but I'm sure that around some of the people are claiming to be potential beneficiaries.
Well, I think they are then intended to continue this, so I'll give them a minute to respond. The information is public, as you well know. It is publicly available for anybody who cares to know where to look for it, which I will not disclose now because it is publicly available and he knows exactly where it can be obtained. But he also knows, Mr. Speaker, he must know by now, that I've written a letter of complaint to the Charities Commissioner in that Commissioner has not filed his account to the Charities Commission for the last 3 years, Mr. Speaker, for the last 3 years. If he's so concerned about his pensioners, he surely must have concern as to where the money is. I'm concerned with the number of the available member offices. I could be concerned about the money. This is something that the top two have run over the money. That the credit union is still taking the financial or the information. I don't know. Maybe the question is because they will all know each other. And I'm very capable of doing certain things and capable of not doing certain things. We have to be able to create new community. You may not be a person that doesn't know.
Thank you.
will answer this question with 412 to 416. In relation to the previous question, the number of individuals within the public service employed by recruitment or labor supply agencies, we've identified the department agency authority and or government openings where those individuals are working. Question number 413, the number of DAs contingent. In relation to the previous questions on the number of individuals within the public service employed by recruitment or labor supply agencies, how long have those individuals been working within those departments, agencies, authorities, and or government companies? Question number 414, the Honourable D.A. Pinkham. Those were answers to questions 252 and 106 of 2018. In relation to the number of individuals working within government departments, companies, agencies, or authorities, through services provided by recruitment consultants and agencies, how did the government explain the massive inconsistencies in the answers provided? Question number 415, the Honourable D.A. Pinkham. The report answers to question 306 of 2018 and written question 21 of 2018. How did the government justify the massive inconsistency in the answer provided? Question number 416, the Honourable D.A. Pinkham. How many individuals are currently being trained under government sponsored training schemes identifying the scheme and the number of individuals per scheme? This is the Honourable Minister of Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GSP. The number of individuals provided by labor supply agencies known to be in the national minimum wage is 188. Deployed as follows. CSRO, December 14, 1. Tourism, May 17, 2. Tourism, July 17, 3. Law officers, May 17, 1. Law officers, April 2018, 1. IGP, June 17, 1. IGP, August 17, 1. GSA, November 13-1, GSA, January 15-1, GSA, June 15-2, GSA, December 15-1, GSA, May 16-1, GSA, July 16-1, GSA, June 17-1, GSA, July 17-1, GSA, August 17-4, GSA, November 17-2, GSA, December 17-2, GSA, February 18-2, GSA, March 18-4, GSA, April 18-4, GSA, May 18-5. Borders and Customs, February 18-1, Procurement, January 18-1, GPMS, August 17-1, GPMS, November 17-1, GPMS, January 18-1, GPMS, February 18-1, Tax Office, January 15-1, Tax Office, August 15-1, Tax Office, September 15-1, Tax Office, March 17-1, Tax Office, June 17-1, Tax Office, July 17-1, Tax Office, August 17-1, Tax Office, September 17-2. Edit August 41, Edit May 61, Edit August 61, Edit November 61, Edit March 17-3, Edit July 17-1, Edit November 17-1, Edit January 18-2, Edit January February 18-1, DFS October 16-1, DFS December 16-1. DSS, December 17-2, MOT Center, January 17-2, MOT Center, September 17-1, MOT Center, April 18-1, MOT Center, May 18-1, Housing Department, September 15-1, May 17-2, January 18-1, February 18-1, territory, September 14-1, October 14-2, April 15-1, May 15-1, August 15-1, September 15-1, May 15-2, July 16-1, June 17-1, July 17-2, August 17-3, September 17-1, October 17-3, December 17-1, February 18-2, March 18-5, April 18-1. Third agency, October 13-1, October 14-2, December 14-2, May 14-1, July 14-2, July 15-4, September 15-1, November 15-1, December 15-1, February 16-1, February 17-1, July 17-1, November 17-1, January 18-1, February 18-2, March 18-2, August 14-2, February 15-1, May 15-1, February 17-1, April 17-1, October 17-2. Human Resources, September 15-1, July 17-1, Health Service, August 17-1, March 18-1, April 18-1, February, February 15-1, November 15-1, March 18-1, April 18-1, September 13-1, Education Department, July 17-1, September 17-1, January 18-1, April 18-1, Statistics, October 17-1, February 18-1, March 18-1, April, January 15-1, May 16-1, April 18-1, Paradigate, May 18-1, GSLA, February 2018-1, Housing and Equality, August 15-1, December 17-1, March 18-2. IT, February 15-1, Sports and Culture, February 15-1, May 17-1. Office of Criminal Prosecution, February 17-1, World War II Channels, July 17-1, February 18-1, March 18-1, April 18-3. The answer to question 106 was tested on the basis of persons actually working in December 2017. And the answer to question 252 was tested on the basis of persons who had been supplied to work in those departments up to December 2017. There is no inconsistency, much or otherwise, with the answer provided to question 306 and W21 of 2018. The number of individuals serving in government sponsored schemes are as follows. Carpentry 11, painting 9, plumbing 13, work trade 31, bus driver 8, rail driver 7, public operator 4, nursing assistant 12, administration 6, security 7, domestic 2, computer 4, healthcare 1, self controller 1, electrical 1, cook 1, messenger 1, hairdressing 1, IT 2, procurement 1, crew member 1, sales manager 1, kitchen porter 1. So, Mr. Speaker, in relation to the inconsistency, because when I asked Minister Costa about people that are working within recruitment consultancy in the GSA, the care agency, and elsewhere, he said that there were 62 within the GSA. He then said there were 382 within the care agency. He also said that there were 127 within the elderly residential services. And you look at the answer that the Honourable Minister provided me, it was markedly less. You accept, therefore, that the answer that the Honourable Mr. Fessel provided me was an up-to-date, accurate answer in relation to those areas, and therefore he's having to comment publicly or otherwise about the amount of people working for recruitment consultants in those areas, care agencies, GHO, urban living services. I should be relying on Mr. Fessel's figure, not the figures that he provided in answer to me. Well, that depends on what he intended to ask with a question. Because Mr. Duggan, he did so on the 31st of December. Now, if I had to tell him like that, I would have given him the number of people working on that day. But in fact, the figure that I gave was for the people working in that month. And the figure that Mr. Fessel was provided with was the people that had worked in the financial year, that is from the 1st of April to December. It doesn't mean they work throughout the period, because, you know, that, particularly in an area like care and health service, people, you know, work different roles in different times. It doesn't mean that there are, that can be 100 people working, but they're not 100 all there on one day. It works for the figure for one day. But the reason, quite apart from the fact that some types of the questions that were put to my colleague were not in the question that he put to me. They're not identical. In fact, if they had been identical, they would not have been accepted. So that was a slightly different focus, because mine was about all areas of the government and his was about the area for which he was responsible. But in any event, you know, the figure. As far as we are concerned, I think in the context that I told him that it is that it's not just for the month of December. The figure that was not just for the month of December. So there would have been some people who had worked earlier in the year that were not working in that month. I just want to get to ask you an answer question. I asked two separate questions from two separate angles. The first question was, as at the 31st of December 2017, how many individuals working within the GHO care agency and regularly living services through recruitment consulting, and how many were employed directly by those organizations? So I wanted to add that background. What is your area? Add that background. I wanted to get a picture of how many people were in these government agencies or departments add that background through recruitment consulting. That's what I want to do. I ask the same question in terms of the public service generally, is that you will be granted by the Honourable Minister to see what the answer is in the region. And then I have two separate answers. Look, I'm not going to accept the same discussion and go into a criticism of the answers, even though they are susceptible to criticism. What I want to know is the accuracy. I am going to say that even the answer that was provided to you by Minister Pesta is not accurate, because I asked on the 31st of December, and the figures that you provided are not as at the 31st of December, but after the entire year, the sending that might have been working with February, for example, that many longer work as at the 31st of December within those government services. Included within those figures. And of course, in that proposition, can I have a proper statistical information as to what is the position on the 31st of December? I think that the answer to that is that the people who said the answer didn't interpret it the way you have done it and the way I would have done it, which is to say you wanted for that particular day. That's why you said the 31st of December. I think they took the question on the basis of who had been in the book at the agency or the hospital in a period which included the 31st of December. So the answer, he did not get the figure for that particular day. That's clear. I understand where the Honourable Gentleman is getting. Of course, because we're dealing with a Labour form, we call them consensus, and the nature of that Labour in certain circumstances, not in all circumstances, in some circumstances, there are people that have been working for 3 years, for example. I know somebody that came to see me recently, who was a recruitment consultant in a government department, a very government department, I should say, but for 3 years, started, continuously. And of course, the nature of this type of labor is that somebody may, for example, be working on the 28th for 5 hours, and may not be doing any hours on the 31st. That may be 5 hours on the 5th of January. The thing is that the Honourable Gentleman has provided, at least I asked for it in the sense, that those are the people on the book. So those are the people that have basically come in for water as and when they're needed. The information that they have is actually being prepared by the staff in those departments. It's just that they did not interpret literally the question, as I would have done. They had addressed that question over there. Simply said, we're working good, we have not been given that number. I would say, I'm not sure that we've been accepted by going in more or less. So the answer to my original question is a rising consistency is because the civil servants were being helpful at the end of the day.
The public sector
public civil servants, morally, and put ourselves in public servants, morally. The public servants get more money, but they have fixed quotas of debt. We ask them about the place where they are, not fixed quotas of debt, and the answer is that they are not going to be by definition. By the definition of the previous administration, if the government has had a civil service, it's an accurate rendering of the figures of the civil service. That's why there is no inconsistency. And just for my benefit in the future, I have to disagree with you in terms of this distinction between the public service and civil service, to the extent that it speaks to the extent that it speaks to a tribute. That distinction to something that the European government did. I have always interpreted the public service as including the civil service. And the civil service is not the same. The civil service is not the extent of the public service. But the public service includes the civil service, plus also the GDC and other areas. So, in his view, I can see that Mr. Speaker wants to intervene. I can see that Mr. Speaker wants to impact the very moment of the issue.
No, I'm not going to
involve
myself in the public.
But as far as he's concerned, the public service therefore is what? The GDP, public authorities, and agencies. What exactly does the public service include for my benefit in the future when I ask this question? Because I have already seen public service include the civil service or the civil service that makes it quite entirely with the public service, obviously. The public sector. So the public sector, okay, paid by the public, and they are composed of two elements. The civil service, which is the service of the town, people who are servants of publicly owned entities. And that is the public service. The public service is general, and the public service is the health authority, and the public service is the electricity authority. And they are not employees of the town. They are employees of an entity which can be a statutory body, which is created by law, or it can be a limited liability company as well. So when we ask that question about the public service, the public service is the non-civil service part of the public sector. The difference between the two in terms of their status is that in fact the civil servants are the servants of the town. And the government of Western Nigeria is not the servant of the government, the servant of the future. Has been made abundantly clear. We move on to 417. Question number 417, the Honourable Ms. Dean Dean Van Nouwen.
Can government explain why it has implemented an administrative charge to public servants for their contributory pensions?
Thank you very much for the economic development and communications of the GSP. Yes, Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question with 4 minutes. Question number 418, the Honourable Ms. Dean Dean Van Nouwen.
How much rent per month does the government pay for its offices in Europol in respect of 1. The finance centre, 2. The offices of the financial services ministry, and 3. The ministry for traffic and transport?
I have the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications, and the GSP. Mr. Speaker, there has always been an administrative charge in respect of public sector contributory occupational pension. It was recently noted that the charge in respect of one of the towns, which was announced in January 2012, had not been implemented, and this omission is now being corrected. The Finance Center offices, which have been rented since 1998, can be paid 7,600, and the office of the Financial Services Ministry, which has served with the office of the Minister for Tourism and the Port, also paid 7,600. The third office mentioned is that the Minister for Transport, the monthly rent there is 2,455.
the charge that may or may not have been heard, but what would you say to the people, the public servants who have made it quite clear that this is a new charge that they didn't know about?
When we introduced the new scheme in 2012, the Guaranteed Superannuation Fund, which we have committed ourselves to, we actually have a fund where people pay 8% and the employer pays 17%. The fund that we had before was not an administrative charge, which is very small. We are paying the charge, and the employer is only paying 10%. That is to say, in the pension fund, that is listed where the charge was being paid for the administration, the contribution of the employer was 10% of the pay. In the new one, where it was announced in 2012 that there was going to be a charge, but it's been overlooked and hasn't been implemented, they are actually getting a much, much better deal than the people who are paying the charge in the previous one. Because they are getting this for they put in 8%. So if they put in £8, the government put in £17, and that means their fund has now got £25. Administering that £25 carries a charge which is a few pennies. I don't know if it's good about the few pennies given the bill that they're getting. Either people in the same job prior to January 2012 put in a fiver, got £10 and had a charge for a money that was £15, and therefore what you can say, the people is that they're not being asked to pay something that other people have not been paying before. They've been asked to pay something that they should have been paying since January 2012, and that has been administered by the civil servants administering the scheme that they were not being paid. And that all the people before January 2012 have been paying it, even though their pension thought was less valuable than the one that we brought in when we came in 2011. So, you know, even if the payment company says for the contribution, it's still getting a little bit. And then the end, you know, the lack of that has been overlooked for 6 years, the sort of the budget in January 2012.
Thank you, Mr. Peter, for that answer. The question is that now, unlike before, the fund is part of the civil service and the public service, is there a policy for a service run by civil servants? So who is actually profiting from that something that looks like a sales tax?
The service tax, I am told, is a very, very small amount compared to what it is. It's not like the private company charge when they administer investment. But the provident funds that were introduced 10 or 15 years ago have all carried the charge from the beginning. And the charge is because the duties of the civil servants that administer these things, there is a charge made to be run by the government to the provident fund for the time that the civil service has spent in not on civil service work, but on the work of the fund. Even though the civil service himself may be a beneficiary of that particular fund. All I'm saying is that since this is an issue that has been there now for 20 years, nobody has ever questioned it and nobody could do that as it, and it was there from day one. The people are questioning it now are the people who, by mistake, when they've been charged, just disappears. After somebody, you know, goes back to the fund. Now, I mean, we didn't introduce the concept of the charge. The concept is because there was no contributory scheme in the public sector in the past. And therefore, when the public service, which is the non-civil service
government was created, people who were working in entities which were not civil servants, by definition, they were not servants of the crown, they were not entitled to the necessary civil service protection. We had in the system that developed post 1996, you had people who were civil servants, who were in the civil service pension fund, you had people who were not civil servants, who were public servants, in the public service, who then had a provident fund created for them. That provident fund had a charge. The people could say, as the temporary operator is still in existence, there are still people in that system, and the employer pays 10%. There is a small administrative charge for the time that is taken, which is not time for work on civil service duty, but time for work on the administering of that. But it is frankly insignificant in the context of the value of those funds. When we came in 2011, the decision of the previous administration was triggered at the time that we came in. We thought that all new entrants into the civil service would no longer enter into the civil service by the fellow team. They would enter into the provident fund. We actually said at the time, when this was done, that the gap between the provident fund and the civil service kind of fellow team was too big. But the alternative that had been put compared. Very badly with what was being argued. You could understand the argument. You know, the British government thought that this was a ticking time bomb. And in fact, if that blow, the cost of administering the payments and making the payments to the civil service grew by about £2 or 3 million a year, even though there are no new members coming in. This is left from the people who were there before. So, the last government took the decision, it was accepted by the civil service, and it was agreed with the union, and it was implemented. We actually felt that the new scheme, the provident fund, was, you know, significantly less valuable than what had been ended, and we decided to create something that would be better to bridge that gap. And that is the superannuation fund. And the gap has been closer to the original because we actually came up with the figure of 25%. The figure of 25% is not an accident. The figure of 25% was a figure that we thought of, I thought of, because the people in the civil service who were not on the civil service pension scheme used to get the 25% in lieu. The civil service pension scheme was valued for contract officers at 25%. So we said, well, we can put something that is closer to the civil service pension scheme, and we make the total value 25%, and then 1/3 of the 25% is spent by the employer, and 2/3 by the employer. And that is how it all comes about. So that explains how the system is for this.
I understand what the Honourable Gentleman's point has done, and I appreciate it, but when talking about the fee, the admin fee, we're talking about public servants paying a fee to public servants to administer what is a new pension scheme, and it seems a bit circular and unnecessary given that it's no longer going to a private fund at all. It's now being administered by the same people, so I don't understand why the admin fee itself has to be implemented.
I'll try to make it easier to understand it. Look, the first thing you said is not something that is being done that is new. It's been done since the first provident fund was created. Okay? But the second thing is that the people who think that they have to pay something new now actually would compensate directly because if they had been told in 2012, you're going to pay a fee. They would not have quoted it because everybody that was on a less valuable scheme has already paid the fee. So, well, I'm not being treated any worse. Is that like, you know, the operations that are released and they're not implemented. Why do we need to take a look? There are costs involved in managing this thing, well, and therefore the cost can only be paid either by the beneficiary or from the fund. I mean, if it wasn't, if the fear of interest was human life, we would have to have some mechanism to deduct the money. Otherwise, we're just telling you the costs that are involved in the administration of this fund. It was paid by the bear. The Congress is already paying 17 pounds for every 8 pounds that the employee put.
Of the social aspect of what it is to be in employment.
the door of construction company, I believe. Employ many people who suffered with mental health issues, with offenders, and people who would find it trying to hard to find employment in the private sector. And this company is now shrinking to the extent where people have been offered early entry packages. And those employees who took the early entry package, for example, are now in a position where they are unable to keep any benefits, employment benefits, or even be employed by any government department or agency, as well as losing out on being able to contribute to a pension, which is also creating a further problem by the person not being able to get a pension when that person on pension leave. I think obviously there is a huge lack of support, not only for those employees, but all employees in potential employees who suffer with mental health issues. And they are at a loss of where they need to go in order to seek that help and to seek that support in getting employment. So the Alba Minister acknowledged that there is a lack of support and will be committed to doing something about it.
I don't think the accurate extent the company existed for people with mental health problems, that is not the case. Because in fact, I remember distinctly one particular case that I defended of a service mishap, where the person was dismissed because they had a mental health problem. So, by that particular company that is mentioned, and eventually won it, the service mishap case. Most of the people that went into that company, frankly, were people who had not mental problems or health problems, but really social problems, or else they had, been offences that might be difficult for them to find employment. And the reality is that the company that was set up for that purpose, in our view, was not achieving the kind of reintegration into society, because you had a company where everybody with the same background would work together, which is not a very clever thing to do, in my view. What we do now is that we invest the money in persuading people, and in fact, we are being successful. I mean, I mentioned that to the honorable member when he asked me in the past specifically about the offenders that were being held, and I told him what we were doing and how it was working. I think in the introduction to the question, if somebody is unable to work, then by definition we cannot help him into a job, because unable to work means that somebody is certified as medically not able to work. If somebody, because of a mental illness, for example, in this particular case that I mentioned, the company argued when they terminated the employment, that because of the mental illness, the individual was risk to the other employee. So it depends on the nature of the mental illness, to what extent it can be accommodated. But certainly, from the perspective of the funding that I control, which is to help the unemployed into employment, what we do is that we are more generous with our funding, in order to make it more effective to compensate for that. And anything more that can be done in that direction, I'm going to look at it, and if you're not going to make any particular idea, either of the ones that you suggested, which I don't think is a good idea, I'm happy to have a look at it if he gets in touch with me and he wants to make my suggestion to me, I'll look at it. Will the Honourable Minister then commit that employees, especially for those who are from the company which we've been discussing, who are at a loss in terms of being able to really seek new employment elsewhere due to the nature of their history and past in the community, that they will be able to hopefully seek employment in the private sector, whether it's real estate or foreign development or not, but the government will be there to support them in keeping the communities.
But when people refer to the training program, because I heard you said a speaking employment, the department has them with their CV and has them to get in touch with their boss and submit their name to the boss, and then in the council that they're doing well, you know, that deals with people who have certain criteria centers is also involved in talking to these people to assess how we can provide help to them. But the reality of it is that it's difficult in this particular case, it's difficult in terms of continuity. That is, even when you get an employer and a help and they take you home, because of the nature of that illness, sometimes, you know, many persons in this category tend to be persons who, when they feel better, they tend to stop taking medication, which they should be taking all the time, and then sometimes either they don't turn up to work, or the things at the brain, you know, needing help. So that is a continuing thing, and, you know. It's quite often the case that the same customer has to be helped several times, because it's inevitable that will be the case. And what we do is that we've got people who are more understanding and more willing to help, and we tend to go to look into those employers to accommodate it. But any other thing that can be done, if it's, you know, reasonable and within our means, we are willing to come. We are now to question 421, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
If the candidate has said the number of individuals tied with him to the first time,
I will give the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 42.
Question number 422, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
If the candidate has spent part of the date of his question, the staff and complement broken down into roles of Bruce is gone.
I will give the Honourable Chief Minister.
There are currently 8 persons undergoing the residential rehabilitation program at Bruce is gone. The current staff of Bruce is gone consists of the following roles: 3 counselors, 10 caregivers, 1 administrator, 1 administrative officer, 1 cook, 1 part time nurse. Listening to the ability of families and announcements, which will also positively impact on care of these funds, by the provision of an additional service by the GHO of a GP specializing in alcohol and substance abuse, who will attend to this 5 months a week. I am grateful for the answer by the Chief Minister, and we certainly from this side of the House welcome the announcement yesterday. It is a matter of which we have been raising for a number of years, particularly this time. I think it is nice in relation to the problem with addiction in our community. We certainly welcome that development announced by the Honourable Minister for Health yesterday. Insofar as the counsellors that currently work at Bruce's Farm, can the Chief Minister confirm that they are addiction qualified in terms of the counselling service they provide? It may sound obvious, but I didn't mean from the answer to that question that they weren't. Rivers, but I don't have that exact information here.
Question number 423, the Honourable Adam Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the government please provide a list and value of all public contracts in which the thousands or partners and first family members of ministers may have a go with direct or indirect financial interest as at the 31st of November 2017.
I'm going to
call the contract in question only one involved family members of ministers. As follows, when the contract was sent out to provide bandwidth to 12 schools and 10 internet connections for other government departments, totaling £7,800 per month, which means that Israel has an interest in 10,000 families. The contract was awarded at
assistance minister for the government, but you think this problem is wrong for this complete?
As you take some of the sound from the minister that the government is complete, then it says my offer is quite wide, and I should put it on notice that there is a one contract that he hasn't mentioned. I have checked with each person to see that I'm satisfied the answer I have given him is correct, and the one the contract that he's going to refer me to, I will give him the explanation for. When he gives that explanation, he might reconsider whether he thinks that the answer I've given him is incorrect. I'm grateful to the Chief Minister. Although no disrespect in terms of the military violence, once he knows that he has an interest through a family member in wildlife, which has, as listed in the reference book, certainly at least two contracts of a value of £1.3 million. My hypothesis worked quite widely in the sense of a sort of direct or indirect financial interest. I'm interested in why the Chief Minister has not included this contract, although I have read the Minister's register of interest, and he indicates that there is a 40% interest, although there is no director fee or remuneration, but nevertheless, the 40% interest in an entity that has a contract is still financial interest. I don't agree with you that if the entity has a contract with the government and uses all of the money that is received from the government for the purposes of investing it in the maintenance and upkeep of the Alameda Gardens, which is what that company was created to do. In other words, there is no remuneration taken, and therefore there is no interest in the finances of that company, because all of the finances of the company are invested in the Alameda Gardens. So monies are paid as salaries to people who are employees of the company, and the Honourable Gentleman has been told and knows that in the case of the Minister and now his wife, they do not receive any salary or remuneration, but they provide a service to the company, and the company, if it has any accumulated profit, except to put that money back into the gardens, it doesn't allow, indeed it probably doesn't allow, but the Honourable Member and his wife do not take money out of the company, they put it into the gardens. So I don't think any Honourable Member can say that that is a financial interest, but all of the money is used for the further investment and therefore for the further control of maintenance, etc., in the element of that is something which I think he will want to commend the Minister for. In many instances, people might say, well, I'm a director and I'm entitled to a dividend. John Cook was a director of this company, and he became a minister, his wife became a director of this company, and what they do is that they read any surplus of the payment of the salaries of others, they then take the salary into the government. Very well done too. Not a direct or indirect financial interest for themselves in any material regard, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 424, the Honourable Arthur Temple.
Mr. Speaker, can the Governor provide a full copy of the 19-day audited financial statement for Gibraltar Capital Assets Limited for the 31st of March 2017?
I'm from the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Government, the answer is coming together with 45.
Question number 425, the Honourable Adam Trinity.
Standing government is why in its balance sheet as at the 31st of March 2017, to what extent has the Centre's report said creditors are not falling due after more than 1 year, end quote, as £295,203,857 instead of £300 million.
The
Honourable Government has been able to obtain the publicly available balance sheet, which is filed with the Company House. This complies with the filing requirement, and therefore, this is the information that will be available to them.
£5,259,857 instead of £300 million is to do with accounting standards. In that provided to the government is that accounting standards require that transaction costs to be deducted and be amortized over the useful life of those loans using the effective interest rate.
I'm going to indulge on my supplementary question, and that's quite an important question. If I may just ask a question on a ruling or point of order as to whether members of Parliament are entitled to ask information that is in the government's possession in the form of full sets of accounts for a company which is a real public interest. In which is only filed with us, is whether we're entitled in Parliament to ask for this information of government, or is it that the members in this side of the House are only entitled to speak to the public, are entitled to speak. So that the government's view in that respect is that all the members are entitled to ask for whatever they like, and the government is entitled to rationalise what information it provides and why it gets there. And all the members would know or should know. In particular, those who have been supporters of the party that they now all accept the honorable lady, especially, that the position established by them when they were in office was that honorable members of this House were entitled to the public filings in respect of government companies, except that at the time that they were in office, they made no public filings in respect of government companies. I think the position of the government, because you might ask for a ruling on the set up for me, but when somebody asks for a ruling, they have to allow both views to be expressed in relation to that ruling. And the position of the government speaker is therefore that there is an established procedure of the House that honorable members can ask for things, and that the government will follow the procedure that they establish with respect to the answer that we give in relation to this particular thing, which are the accounts of a company.
I have nothing to put this in, obviously, because I've already just that. I ask the honorable member to write to me, explaining exactly what it is that you want a ruling on. I will then consider the exchanges, answer, and if necessary, before I give a ruling, if necessary, I put it in right.
I thank you for that. And if I may, again, for better indulgence, possibly supplementary on a technical issue.
Can I ask the Chief Minister to confirm to his house when he signed a document reported to be a special resolution on the Wolf Capital Assets Limited on 16th March 2016, and basically substituting the Articles Association on the Wolf Capital Assets Limited renewed Articles Association. Does the Chief Minister recall that it was a document? Mr. Speaker, I would be specific to that question, and in order to enable me to consider whether it is an appropriate question for me to reply.
I'm happy to give the Chief Minister a copy of such document. I think there's a place where this is indeed a signature on this document, or whether it is a valid document.
No intention of being asked to identify documents and rely on the veracity of the document put to me by a member of the opposition. If he wants me to consider the document, he can write to me and I can reply to him on it, but I am not going to entertain him by considering whether a document that he puts to me is a genuine document or not. And I put it to you, Mr. Speaker, that if all of the questions that the honourable member is going to ask now relate to the question on which he was asked for a ruling, should write to you in the ruling as you've indicated before he continues. I will refer you, Mr. Speaker, if that's on him, to the rulings book, the Gibraltar House has sent these piece of rulings and statements, which John E. Alcantara very hopefully collated when he was Speaker in August 1996. And to the ruling by Mr. Speaker on the 24th of January 1989, and the other ruling of Mr. Speaker of the 25th of March 1980 in respect of the obligations of members of this House to ask the questions in respect of companies in which governments have a share. And so I don't think it is effective to any parliament that I'm aware of, because I'm not in the Westminster Parliament, whereby a member of the opposition passes over to a member of the government a document and ask for to give such an opinion. I don't think that that is the practice, you know. Governments in opposition do not hand over documents across the floor of the House. And so far, Speaker is trying to be helpful. Speaker, the reason why I asked the Chief Minister to identify such a good document is in one way authorizing the change the article to divorce capital representative. That's a super. I do refer the Chief Minister to Article 26 of those articles which we did sign off on the right of divorce agreement corporation. And so the director said it was best to be charged from here to deliver to registered company copy of the account. I want to see the definition of account in the MRI for Chief Finance.com states the auditor financial account of the company for each financial year and supplies an internal record account balance sheet flow to the company name and including no reports mentioned in Article 13. Gentlemen, know that we are in the present machine that we will have guaranteed to David long even when he has those accounts filed. He will be able to work as a victim with government companies in the time that they were elected, which incidentally elicited the same answers that he's getting from me when we ask questions about those companies. Although I think we were a little more circumspect because we understood the rulings of Mr. Speaker from 1980 and from 1989. And Mr. Speaker, he will know that a member of a parliament is not entitled to more information than a member of the public. If you think that that is the case, Mr. Speaker, then he is really in a situation of utter delusion. He believes he has been elected to privilege. He has not been elected to privilege, Mr. Speaker. He has been elected to serve and to serve within the confines of the laws of the nation which we must all abide by. And we're not going to treat him more favorably than others, and we're not going to give him copies of things which are publicly available, to prepare to his own copy. And if things are not publicly available, well, Mr. Speaker, then we're not going to make them available to him. In keeping with the established rulings of the number of speakers of this House, and in keeping with the process established by a government which has the political authority that they represent, and was led by a man who has escaped once again from the lips of the honorable former leader of the revolution, this is driving the greatest libertarian of all time.
Mr. Speaker, the honorable chief minister is taking his answer on one simple and concrete premise, and that is that this information is not public information, and therefore the honorable government is not entitled to the information because it's not public. But actually, the reality is that this is a public company, it's a government-owned company that has been used in order to facilitate the mortgaging of public assets, and the constitution of that company, the constitution of the company, states that the company is to file publicly all the accounts that are left out on the balance sheet. The only reason why the information is not public is because the government is changing to have seen brief of the constitution of this very important company. Now, that's the honorable chief minister. I've heard all the government that is supposed to be a responsible government think that it is right for a company of this nature to act in breach of its own constitution. But where the gentleman has not understood the question from the person who says to his right, the former leader of the opposition. The one who was ready to take over but wasn't quite able to find the support. To find that the current leader of the opposition enjoys the support of anyone who doesn't stand in that direction. But anyway, first of all, a public company, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman has said, a public company is a company that has, from my recollection, more than 50 shareholders. I don't know whether the rules changed since I last looked at it. That's what a public company is. A public company is a company which has more than 50 shareholders. What the Honourable Gentleman meant was a company the shares of which are owned by the government. I refer him to the rulings of various speakers. This is what I've done already. The Honourable Gentleman introduced to the possibility that the memorandum articles of the company have been amended in order to require it to file more than any other company has to file. I have not said that it's not the case. I have said I'm not going to expect them across the floor of the House, and they should write to me in that respect. It is right, Mr. Speaker. It is right, and I'm not going to look at it now across the floor of the House. Then, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman would be completely wrong. Because then, Mr. Speaker, what Mr. Clinton is saying, what the Honourable Mr. Clinton is saying, is that the government required the company to file more than the law requires it to file. And he would be left with a question that is based on an error, because he hadn't understood the question asked earlier by his Honourable friend. And if Mr. Clinton is right, and when he sends me the document, I will consider that, then the director of the company may
has failed to file the required balances, not the government, which I am the head of the executive of. I don't know whether he's understood it or whether he's thinking about it. It is a two-pointed split, like the jack in the box, and I would have blood pressure all over the place. But I commend to him that he should have a quiet word with Mr. Clinton before he springs up again and makes a fool of himself once more.
Speaker, I have to say, he is on borrowed time. He really is. And the way that he answers questions, diverting, calling people fools, and nobody got intelligent to see him because he went to Oxford University, and all that may have been acceptable to the people of Gibraltar 4 years ago, but it's increasingly offensive. That is not acceptable any longer. There is no catch up with him. Can you, at the very least, guarantee this to this house that if the Honourable Member, Mr. Clinton, writes to him, he proves to him, and I have seen those documents and I've discussed it with him, that he should know, because it was him that affected the statute. One set of articles or another. It's him that approved these articles as minister. I don't understand the subject to the honorable gentleman. And that is the rule that this company is in breach of its constitution in not filing a credible left account and a balance sheet that the honorable gentleman has accepted the head of the government. And therefore, the minister will go in this company. But he will do what needs to be done to make sure that those documents are filed. Because it would be more unfair to speak up. If one man died, and the other one told him that he was there, that he was right, then one substitute went to the hospital for an answer to that report to provide the rest of the files. Bah, bah, bah. Even if you could see the company's service, that would really take the victim as far as electoral transparency is concerned. Well, he wanted to put finger on me in a way that I suppose is reminiscent of the way that he would write his name into me. I am writing my finger at honorable members because I like him to get out of hand. And to put to the merit of the matter, let us not bring anything that is external and don't debate. Let's get on with it.
That is the speaker. When he has a finger at me, I do not begrudge it when he was the leader of the party opposite. Those who abandoned the party, some of them have come back. I wish I had indicated that I had the courage of that conviction enough standing away. And thereby led him not to be a borrowed time, but to run out of time. That's the reality, Mr. Speaker. And if you don't want to get out and talk about borrowed time, you've got to accept the response that deals with that. And the question is, Speaker, that he might imagine himself in a different parliament today. If he's addressing the head of an executive on the Iberian Peninsula who is on borrowed time. Speaker, it's not the head of the executive. And Speaker, if what honourable members are saying in respect of the demand of an article of the Association of the Company is correct, then what they have got to do is taking that further transparency. And what they have found is that the directors have failed to act in keeping with what I require them to do. What I'm not going to do is accept today from them that the documents they put to me are offensive and foreign. But if everyone will write to me, he will get a response from me that will deal with the issues that he raises. Because, look, it's very clear to me that if I sign the document after a company has been incorporated to require to do more than the law requires, I'm not going to go back on that. I send us a document that I remember showing it is a genuine one that I filed and I genuinely signed, and I will ensure that I have access to original and less copies sent across the floor of the House as if this were a courtroom, which it is not. I want to remind the honourable members that there are
government, and this is the legislature, not the judicature.
Question number 426, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise the European Energy Consent for the Development Development Corporation to borrow money under Section 22B of the Development Development Corporation Act being from a person other than the controller of the fund, and if so, from whom and for what period in term? Canadian government agrees to be silent in their ratio of any loans or security agreements due to Barclays Bank or NatWest, and if so, in what amount and to whom? Answer the Honourable Chief Minister. The Speaker, there has been no assignment or ratio of any loans or facility agreements due to Barclays or NatWest. The only change of any loan has been the loan with GCP Investments Limited. In this case, GCP Investments Limited repaid in full an existing loan it had obtained when the GSP were in power. And as a government company, it was still borrowing when the GSP were in power. Barclays provided this opportunity in loan documentation to repay the amount outstanding. This is an extremely high interest rate negotiated by Honourable Mr. Clinton's party and their own government. And GCP therefore sought a new finance option at a much cheaper cost. And GCP Investments is also therefore able to reduce security in the process. And speaker, I'm grateful to the Chief Minister for his comprehensive answer. If I were to understand the Chief Minister properly, the loan is repaid, but the money for the repayment of that loan communicates another provider. How would it be able to release the security on the loan? Is it that the property value went up or the new lender required a lower LTV or loan to value ratio on the loan? I believe that the property values have gone up quite considerably in the period since 2010, and that is what enabled us to
I'm sure that the LTV is required and maintained despite the portfolio being not as generous as the one that was initially required. I can tell you that there were two first lien property mortgages, and now there are only six properties mortgages. So they were required to mortgage 13 properties. We were only required to provide security there were 13 under them. Now there are only six. Well, that's compared to the there. I must congratulate the Chief Minister. There are lots of different questions. The new lender is the Gibraltar International Bank, and I've also been able to sell the house, Mr. Speaker. I don't know whether the honourable members are calling, because they think that the Gibraltar International Bank deals with the government other than entirely on entirely commercial terms, because if I may say so, Mr. Speaker, the Gibraltar International Bank has been a huge success because of the professionalism of the people who are running it, and of its board, and of the way that they deal at arm's length with every transaction that they deal with, whether it involves the government or not, and therefore are hugely disrespectful to those people. But the interest rate that they obtained at the time that they negotiated this loan for GCP was 6.82%, Mr. Speaker. That's the rate now enjoyed by the taxpayers, 2.5% for the first 3 years, and an option to commit to another fixed rate or variable rate of 2.25 over this. But I should also say to be done with clarity, not just one way, and I'm a counselor of the government for his kind congratulations. Mr. Speaker, credit is always given away to you. Can I ask the Chief Minister what is the amount of the loan? I'm trying to recall whether it's 20 million or some other amount. If you could provide that, I'd be grateful. This is one of the rooms that I referred to when in the response to the budget speech, I think last year or the year before, when he said that we were borrowing from government companies. I showed him the example of the fact that borrowing from government companies was something that they had introduced, Mr. Speaker, and I'm working with. And I think credit to Mr. Speaker, because those were the rates applicable at the time that we took a loan, then it's difficult to do otherwise. But the loan amount was 16 million, and it is still 16 million.
Question number 430. The
Honourable Adam Kenton. Mr. Speaker, the government advised the administrative process for the issuing of legal letters claiming defamation against the Chief Minister and censured by residents of Gibraltar.
After the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the letter is 431 and 432.
Question number 431, the Honourable Adam Kenton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise the number of legal letters issued claiming defamation against the Chief Minister at residence of Gibraltar for comments on Facebook in the period December 2011 to April 2018, together with the total cost and details of law firms instructed to issue such letters?
Question number 432, the Honourable Bill Pinkham.
Mr. Speaker, yes. Since the Chief Minister was elected in December 2011, how many legal threats for defamation have you issued against citizens in Gibraltar?
I think the Honourable Chief Minister.
It is in the public interest of Gibraltar that its ministers should defend their professional reputation from confronting with profanity and untrue allegations. Too often on social media, Individuals express themselves without the filter of truth, probity, or any understanding of the need to ensure that things are safe and not being reliable of others. It is more than Mr. Speaker has himself on a number of occasions issued letters before acting, and even started proceedings and obtained orders of the Supreme Court from the set of rival
forward in one case, the participant actually obtained a restraining order, preventing the newspaper from mentioning him as a result of a libel action that he took at the time when he was Minister for Justice. Going to the reason behind this question in 2013, about how funding could be made available to him, other opposition members or indeed retired government ministers. In August, 7 years that I have been in office, I have called to have six matters taken up by the auditor against residents of Gibraltar. Additionally, on four occasions, I have called to take action against individuals who are not residents of Gibraltar. In seven different instances, the matter included threats of violence also against my husband and members of my immediate family. The costs involved were steady in financial year 13-14, £5,602. In financial year 14-15, £7,196. In financial year 15-16, £3,036. In financial year 16-17, £6,056. In financial year 17-18, £2,031. And in financial year 18-19, Mr. Speaker, which is the year we are in at the moment, £6,057. The welcome involved on each occasion was assigned the same welcome that the people used for the libel action I referred to above. You know, welcome to Chief Minister for his answer, but I didn't hear anything about the administrative process of issuing a legal letter. If you could enlighten the House on that, please. Mr. Speaker, I think some have fallen out of the answer I have read. The first sentence was, when I last checked it before printing, that the position remains at 10,000 question 430 in 2013. Mr. Speaker, the Attorney then that the Attorney General, or rather the Attorney General's wife, was caught in each case. And if I can ask, who is it that has got caught on? Is it the Attorney General or in court directly? Mr. Speaker, I think those answers are contained in the answer to question 530 in 2013. Yes, Mr. Speaker. I can't recall taking the proceedings that the Honourable Gentleman mentioned, but I think it's worth it. But the difference between him and me is that when I have defended my reputation, I have put my hand in my pocket and I have paid for it myself. And what I want to know is, on what basis does he justify that the taxpayer should pay for his defamation cases, which at the end of the day is a personal claim? That's what it is. A personal claim that his reputation has been damaged as a consequence of a falsehood. Because, of course, you cannot defend a government as you know that. And you cannot defend an episode acquired to program. The claim is a personal claim. And therefore, why should the taxpayer fund his personal claim against the board of directors? Well, it's because he doesn't accept that he paid his legal fees when he decided to take legal action. He took legal action when he was Minister for Justice. He was represented in Tahaya by his brother at the time, Mr. Speaker. He got an injunction against the Vox newspaper that they would never mention him again. They never had a right to him again. He got a challenge of this group. Stop himself being mentioned again in the newspaper. This is really quite remarkable, Mr. Speaker. If he says he put his hand in his pocket, I will tell you, Mr. Speaker, I do not believe that he did. He will be completely wrong if he had, Mr. Speaker, and the government will be invested in being able to show that he paid a penny. Because if he was concerned, then I can't remember what the defamation was. In the context of the discharge of his office, he is entirely entitled to be represented on the taxpayer's bill, Mr. Speaker. Because the definition is not of the individual. It is the definition where the Honourable Chief Minister was a terrible lawyer, when Richard Hadley was not under the taxpayer, should be responsible for defending him. But
because of the definition is in the sense of the first of the effort, then there's a very good reason why historically all of those things have been paid by the taxpayer, not just in Gibraltar, but elsewhere in the future. But what he wants to do is he wants to set up this idea that somehow people have been subjected to legal letters of fraud and the chief ministers specifically. So it's been a great, there are people who are considering who have accepted this because their definition of the chief minister has resulted in them having to apologize because they've received legal letters and they realize that they've defamed people. And some of them are even now in their integrity. So I fully understand why we should let them do this now. This is now a personal matter relating to members of their executive. When he was in government, Mr. Speaker, he took legal action and he understood the importance of that. We are defending the reputation of the office of the minister or the ministerial office of any other. And when people make allegations of Speaker, which are defamatory and untrue, it is absolutely right that they be challenged about that. So I wouldn't be making allegations about him in respect of the discourse of my office if I did not own my office. And that is why successive governments of Gibraltar have seen successive ministers. And I won't mention any others, Mr. Speaker, because I won't mention any of them. And I'm not talking about the other lady. But successive ministers, not talking about the other lady, successive ministers have had their claims to rival funded by the Gibraltar taxpayer. And when you do that, you can get out and try and become a champion as much as you like. But what do you want to do? This is not a public issue. Because the last time you asked me the question, he heard the same was terrible with the people paid. The last time you asked me the question, he was saying, can my things be paid as a member of the opposition? Or can a retired minister things be paid? He was trying to expand that franchise of payments, not reduce it. But this, I've got used to the fact that he said one thing one day, and then I said another. The one thing left to determine the speaker's effect of his career in this court is simply whether he's going to stay and come back after the next election. Is he going to stay or is he going to go? Is he a bad time? Is he trying to buy more time? These are the things for him, Mr. Speaker.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I mean, I have to say, he seems upset by what decisions I might take in the future. But Mr. Speaker, just from the answer, really, I always know when the honourable member is wanting a question instead of debating. Ask a question. I am going to ask a question, Mr. Speaker. I always know when the honourable member is wanting when he gives me rambling answers to the decisions. I am ways in which he can avoid answering the question. I want to make 2 points, Mr. Speaker. First of all, the library.
Because there may be a number of reasons, one of which is
way that Mr. Speaker interprets the rules. They follow them, and then they're not going to agree with it. That's why the interpretation of the rules that says, in the doubt, to give a long, long, long step referring to relevance to the left and center, that you are supposed to say, or something on the side of the house, you're supposed to go on to serve and say. That is what I'm referring to. I believe that anybody listening to this claim and considering that in its proper context, and that is what is valid for the speaker. The answer was absolutely right.
But the member of the state, the government, of course, I have to allow a government minister to answer in supplementary that has been put by the opposition. And therefore, by the nature of things, it is likely that the government minister is going to have an offense. And that the government continues indefinitely, and the ruling side, when a member of the opposition asks the supplementary, I said, yeah, and move on to the next question, and not allow the minister to answer that point. Now, the other thing that I'm going to say is about the length of. I mentioned it, what did it yesterday? I mentioned it yesterday that on a number of occasions I have been drawing the attention of my ministers to make that answer shorter on a number of occasions. So I think it's not very easy for me to control them. There is a very lengthy answer coming up, maybe possibly very, very lengthy. But I wish I had the power to control the length of answers. And visibly, the moment that a minister introduces extraneous matter, I hold the minister to account. I ask him to begin with the business at hand. And I allow him to do that. I don't want to be here listening to extraneous grammar or after. It is just the way that we have a system here in the book, in the book of Parliament, that all of your members are going to be the speaker. If they are going to cover, some of them I think would still have gotten the fair with the house. I explain for 50 cards. If this is better, but we don't have a system which has a recording early this afternoon in the house of the group, then we address each other and then we fight each other. That doesn't happen here. Thank God it doesn't, because I don't know who could keep control otherwise. So let's see if we can turn the whole thing down. Let's see if we can make progress. Because we cannot be here this evening beyond 7:15. I'll keep it I'll ask you to step it into the goal and ask it one message. First of all, you cannot expect that it's not any inaccurate in information during the house. Because the libel case, which he refers to, is not a libel case that I took, it's actually a libel case that my brother, a social worker, took against the Vox newspaper. That's the first. Secondly, I never asked for funding for me in relation to a defamation case, but my questions have always been about, well, hang on a minute. If you say that the tax collector's fund, which he says in Gibraltar, that is funded and has rivaled him in his capacity as chief minister of Gibraltar, well, if somebody as leader of the opposition is libeled in his capacity as the leader of the opposition, what is the difference? That was the point that was made in 2013. And the numerous speculatory questions that I wish to ask in relation to this, because I've always managed to fight something, and that is something which, to his credit, he always does very, very well. He definitely not agree with me that he has obtained, acquired, I should say, a reputation over the last 7 years of being chief minister and being the most humble acting chief minister that has ever served in Gibraltar in terms of these legal letters. And that it is not right to have the chief minister of Gibraltar by the truth there taking so many legal letters for the election. It doesn't look at me with an obligation to so, Mr. Speaker, let me start with the first of those questions. I do not agree that the case was about his brother. The case I'm referring to is the case in which he
Ben Johnson to prevent himself from being mentioned ever again in the Boston paper. So that is not his brother. Why would an arrival case about his brother brought before him not to mention him ever again? Second, Mr. Speaker. No, I don't want to give way. Second, Mr. Speaker. The question of funding is very clear in the one that he took in 2013 from a different perspective. In 2013, he wanted the blanket of financial cover for himself also. He wanted the liquid as he back then, because he was then the liquid liquid, to also the cover, and he wanted to extend it backwards even further to instances when he might have been allegedly liable in the sense of his position as a minister. Then he thought it was in his interest to try and obtain financial support for that position. Now, because he thinks he's popular, although he's told us he's a man who drives the ground and he's going to start for us again, but now that he thinks he's popular, he is going to try and criticize me for having taken action to protect my reputation when I'm challenged with the defamatory allegations as he did so. But he's going to challenge, he's going to make fun of, he's going to take a point of view to me, but with those some of the things which are defamatory, it is absolutely right and proper that people should be subject to reaction. That's what the law is there for. The final question. I am the first instance of all this in something called the social media age. So, before, people with liable rights in a regular newspaper or a newspaper, there are responsible newspapers and irresponsible newspapers. He was very closely associated with a newspaper called The 7 Days, which is an irresponsible newspaper, Mr. Speaker, and an entirely creditable to taxpayer for the purpose of the day to make propaganda. They were talking about everything, Mr. Speaker. Normal media outlets have a filter. Filter of truth and credibility, Mr. Speaker. And the token, when people on social media say something, they don't realize sometimes what they're doing. I don't find it to be that there'd be no damage to action. But there's no attempt to get people to pay in any way. It's to remove comments which are seriously untrue, libelous, and defamatory, Mr. Speaker. And it is absolutely right that a person, whether they agree, should take action in those circumstances. And if that person happens to be an office holder of the government of Gibraltar, it's absolutely right that they should be defended in the discharge of their functions by the taxpayer. I said it in 2013, and I'm not going to change my mind, Mr. Speaker. I think it is absolutely right about the case. They can run around and get people to think that somehow this is an abuse. But when the law arrives, I will be there with the answer to question 514-2013 to remind the general public that they were seeking the financial cover for themselves to do exactly the same thing. That is the typical hypocrisy of double standards. The hypocrisy that Mr. Ramaphosa was endemic in the GOP until they were passed.
I don't accept again how he was characterized it at all. In fact, the questions were all directed on what basis, how is the decision being taken that a chief minister or a government minister is being funded by the taxpayer and is quite out of his capacity as an office holder? What's the difference between an office holder there and an office holder somewhere else? And because that was the issue, it was issue of paper. Although this is the capability, but it's bigger. But didn't really think that the little success has to be into the office. So the true nature of inspection is there, and we will make the ability to send in a legal letter back down. I was not a former citizen, my son, I said, I was not a former citizen, and the taxpayer, not sending questioning legal letters, because what I'm saying to you, if that happened in the United Kingdom, if that was happening in the United Kingdom, there would be absolute outcry of a criminal invasion. And we know that we have been a conscious country, using public funds in this world, in order to sue a threatened to sue members of the public. I can't feel it. And I want to tell that this is the means to get this, it's a means to get this, that
agree with that.
I obviously do not agree with that, but there are other reasons I have given him, but I see the evidence of what he's trying to do. He is trying to rattle round my witnesses, and I'm sure that those in his executive who have been subject to these legal letters from the firm, Mr. Speaker, from this firm, for having said things which are libelous and defamatory, Mr. Speaker, would be the right to pursue him now as their champion, Mr. Speaker. There is a big difference between members of the Ombudsman now and us on this side of the house. It's an obvious difference, it's a legal difference, and I understand it, but it doesn't care to reflect on it today in order to be able to pose the question that he has posed to try and achieve what he's trying to achieve. We are members of the executive, Mr. Speaker. They are not members of the executive. They are members of the Parliament, and we are full members of the Parliament. But we are members of the executive. We are charged with the regulation of describing the functions of government. Something that from the minute he started reading the House of Representatives, people were never going to invest in it to do ever again. But you see, Mr. Speaker, he has an idea of what it is that we do, which is entirely wrong. Kind of a small social media, Mr. Speaker. In fact, I have very little time for social media. But I feel that some of the articles that you have been on social media show would have done before the charity. But I did not see that because I do not have time to see social media. What happens, Mr. Speaker, is that things are brought to the attention of government when they are as out of range and indeed, Mr. Speaker, potentially violent and dangerous as the instances that I have referred honourable members to. And some instances they were referred to us by other authorities, Mr. Speaker. And in those instances, when it's brought to our attention and it is definitely defamatory and libelous, that people are simply to take down what they have said. And that's absolutely right and proper. And it demands an effort, Mr. Speaker, not to defend it. And I will tell him something that he will perhaps never understand. Having held the office of the Minister now for almost 7 years, because the people of Gibraltar have allowed me the privilege to do so, I will defend this office, even when I do not hold it. And even if a member of another party does not hold it, because it is the executive office of political leadership of this nation. And whether it is in the case of Joe Stan or Peter Kahuana, both of them, or Dr. Mitchell or Dr. Hassan, it is absolutely right that we should all understand how important it is that we execute the minister and what is best to defend it, in particular given the external threat that Gibraltar faces. And the same is true for the office of each one of the members of the cabinet and each one of the ministries that they lead, because it is their responsibility. And to accept a defamation, a libel of the way that those offices have been described, is in fact to accept a defamation of the way that we do government in the community. And we are seeing on the Iberian Peninsula today how actions that are absolutely inappropriate and improper. And government does it in court, affects people's ability to respect their government. And we will defend the right to have the government of Gibraltar respected and the office holders of Gibraltar and its government respected, whether we are the ones in office or not. And allowing the penalty remarks to go unchallenged, when they are untrue, is to allow records to be demeaned by those who seek to do part of the damage without regard to the political damage that they do to the Gibraltarian nation. I've now had the opportunity to go back and look at a question from 2013, which you just referred to, 430,213, which is by proof of the question. Of course, it doesn't reference my question of 430,2018. And Mr. Speaker, the question asked the channel, can the people of the state with the government territory? Yes.
I was reading the question over at the time, with can people of the state with the government policy to send their rival candidates by serving government ministers against the media publication. This is a question specifically about government policy. My question for 2018 is about the ministerial process. I'm wondering if you think they could answer the question right there. Because I have read the supplementary to the House and I do not see the answer. Well, I think that the answer is then, because the policy of the admission process are all described there, and in 5.4 of 2013, there's a certain difference that both are for both between 2018 and 2013. And the Speaker, would you please disagree with me then and answer the question 430 2013? There is not a single reference to the involvement of the Attorney General. I would simply agree with you that in the Hansard record of the debate on the answer to question 430, 2013, there is not a single reference to the involvement of the Attorney General. I think I agree with that, and the policy and the investment procedure is what is described in the 430. The answer doesn't involve the Attorney General. Are you referring to that? I do not think it would make sense for the Attorney General to be involved in the process. I haven't given it advice. I thought that was the case of the Atlantic Division. Mr. Speaker, can the government then explain what legal advice they take prior to issuing instructions if the Attorney General, I mean, the lawyer from the government, is not present? Because the government, the Attorney General doesn't have to be present when the government takes legal advice in all the steps. The government takes legal advice from the Attorney General, from the Gibraltar law offices, and from private chambers. Question number 433, the Honourable Premier speaking. What are the government's plans for the relocation of Barrowberg Social Club? I'm from the Honourable Chief Minister. Representative D, I don't know,
for them again. These representatives also were very keen not to have it on other sites in which people took invalid beds, so I don't know who they hold the brief for, because the members of the committee are discussing that various different locations, some in and some out of valid beds. The people who signed the petition didn't want it in one particular place, and the people who came representing were people who signed the petition didn't want it in any other place. So, unless he was going to pretend that he has the ability to expand that old bag now, it may be very difficult to get the commitment in the term of the state. But nonetheless, we are working towards actually achieving the commitment in that way, but I can't say that it will definitely be achieved in that way. And the family, and the grant that he has taken, because he has taken on the basis of the information meeting him as a member of the opposition, when he said that was all good, he said he was there as a friend, not as a member of the opposition. Not to do politics, but to offer free legal advice if they wanted it. And fortunately for him, they told him they didn't want to. Well, Speaker, I have to say, we continue to with impunity almost in the answers, very little that I can do, I have to say, but with impunity, distort and to present, it's a trip I was there. I was there because I was asked by people that actually worked there and also residents of Baalbek, for them to be there in order to advise them about the process and to try and help them out. That is what I did, that is my role, and indeed if I am asked to help anywhere else, that is what I will do, because I am told by the people of Gibraltar to do that, and even if I wasn't told, the reality of the situation is that Baalbek is very close to my heart, because I grew there, and my mother lived there, and I have probably been to the Baalbek Social Club far, far, far more times than the young old boy, the Chief Minister, or ever will be, going to the Baalbek Social Club. Can I ask you this? What are, outside of our good social club, what are the locations that the government is looking at? And am I right that the government is looking at taking court? The government is considering a number of locations, none of them are receiving any consideration which is yet fixed, and therefore I'm not going to get drawn on the subject. But I've already said that some may be in Valdez and some may be outside. I'd be surprised if we've been to Valdez Social Club very often. Since they started flying the GFOP flag, I think we found that now entirely anathema. But it's still legal up there, Mr. Speaker. I didn't, but I've attended very many fantastic GFOP bingos and other events there, and indeed a number of birthday parties. Therefore, I can certainly hope we'll be able to provide a fantastic facility for the residents of Vale Bay. At the order of that provided for them before, by the GSLP, when Benito Latino was their minister, they provided the excellent facilities that they had, which failed to put expenses into less use than they had before, but we remain entirely committed to providing the Baalbek Social Club with brilliant facilities. And maybe, here, or for elsewhere, because given that they're perhaps to grind and they won't be up for themselves for election next time round, he might actually be able to bring himself one day, Mr. Speaker, to utter the words that Roy Clinton uttered at the beginning of questioning of me in respect to the mayor, but he said, I congratulate the Chief Minister, once he provided a fantastic insight for the Baalbek Social Club. Mr. Speaker, actually, it was just 50 members invited. I have to say that they must have been pretty discontented. Well, the person who is, nobody doesn't really understand us. But Joe McConnell died because he was the president of the Social Club. I think the father of the house, whether at least he called his president of the Baalbek Social Club, so the person in relation to this person.
Question number 434, the honorable
to people. I'm not sure this is an appropriate question to try and put it in something down, but
prior to the sale of Block 69 Europort to Grandstone Holdings Limited, did the appropriate authorities in Gibraltar consider freezing the assets of Mr. Alfad and his family? Thank you.
first of all to become aware of the investigation in advance as to the possibility of seeking freedom orders, and that situation was constantly under review. No application was made if the government was advised that legal requirements could not be and still cannot be met. The French and Spanish authorities have frozen properties and bank accounts in Spain, France, and England. The French and Spanish authorities have been aware for a considerable period of time of the existence of a precise financial interest in 69 Europort. An overseas territory would be entitled to register an overseas freezing order if it was suspected that the property had been purchased using property obtained from unlawful conduct, that is to say, the purpose of crime. The registration of the order would be pursued to the European Freedom and Confiscation Orders Regulation 2014. And no changes have been in a request by France, or any other jurisdiction to register in Gibraltar an overseas freezing order in respect of the first outlet. The French authorities have registered in England a freezing order in respect of one property in Mayfair, London, although I understand this was having more than one property in the United Kingdom. The English authorities and the Gibraltar authorities have not undertaken any formal investigation for their own benefit about providing information. The Office of Criminal Prosecution did not have a draft notice of the proceedings in the Supreme Court, and nor have they served with any papers in connection with the proceedings. The proceedings were in private. The handing down of the judgment was in public, and the Office of Criminal Prosecution were made aware of the proposed handing down. Neither the Attorney General nor the Office of Criminal Prosecution took part in any of the proceedings to which reference had been made, nor were they served with any papers. The proceedings in the Supreme Court have been brought by the trustee to seek the court approval of the special sale of 69 Europort and also the sale of a property in Southern London and the companies to which they are owned. Mr. Speaker, the government understands that an investigation by the RDP commenced in 2017 in order to see whether there was any evidence of any criminality that has occurred locally. No arrests were made as a result of this investigation, and none are expected in this investigation. Information and intelligence has been gathered from various sources, both within Gibraltar and from overseas, in respect of all aspects of the matter. All of this information and intelligence is of a confidential nature, and it would not be possible to identify sources or the nature or extent of such material if we disclose more. But Speaker, I am confident that the Attorney General and the Office of Criminal Prosecution are fully cognizant of their responsibilities with regard to the protection of assets in cases of money laundering or any other criminality. In order for a certain proceeding to proceed, the issue, as confirmed by the Chief Justice, is whether when the assets were sold, they were or represented the proceeds of debt. This is specifically set out in paragraph 20 of the Chief Justice's ruling. The Royal Chief Justice also ruled that he was satisfied that the trustee's belief as to the provenance of the balance was a considered and a reasonable belief, and one which could probably be held notwithstanding the ongoing proceedings in France and Spain. The government has no doubt that if the RCC and the Office of Criminal Prosecution have been aware of cogent, provable evidence that could potentially demonstrate that any property in Gibraltar had been obtained with the proceeds of crime or in any way represented the proceeds of crime, then steps would have been taken to pursue for the Proceeds of Crime Act 2014. In the circumstances, there could be no basis upon which it would be suggested that the reputation of Gibraltar as a finance center has been or could be damaged as a result of the ruling of the Supreme Court. The government represents not aware of the terms upon which the properties in question at Europort will be managed in future, if the transaction proposed to the court by the trustees go ahead. But we are confident that the professional reputation of the trustees and the high esteem in which they are held, that all matters concerning the management of the properties will continue to be undertaken transparently and along the way. In fact, given all the events, honourable members and right-thinking people in the wider community who see that the relationship with the French authorities leading on this matter has been excellent, as the Gibraltar has provided extensive assistance to their investigation. In the further example of Gibraltar's international compliance and cooperative approach to this matter, the Supreme Court of Gibraltar has rightly assured that no matter that can reasonably be suspected of representing the proceeds of criminal conduct by any person can be paid out of Gibraltar. Gibraltar's prosecuting authorities could and would apply to the court to prevent this from happening. The Chief Justice, who heard all the relevant evidence and saw all the relevant documents, has nonetheless found that it is reasonable for the Gibraltar trustees believed that your report was not separate from the bad using the process of any criminal conduct. And if a member of the mandatory public should be raised to report his informed views with their own impressions, given that they have not seen the documents nor heard the evidence. And that is true as much for this case as for any other. The Supreme Court was involved by the trustees, only one of which was going to be used to a family, and a matter of good testimony for the practice, and to ensure that any sale was therefore dated in a manner that was transparent to the court and to both them and international law enforcement agencies. Mr. Speaker, it is a matter of public record that the trustees were represented by Sir Peter de Guarda PC. Further, Mr. Speaker, if anything, the court's reputation has therefore been safeguarded as our law enforcement agencies, professionals, and indeed the Supreme Court and the counsel before it have all worked to ensure that the rule of law has prevailed, and further, that should any international law enforcement agency have a claim and the process has failed, time for such a claim to be made has been afforded. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I believe that is a full-time servant of the people of Gibraltar, doing an excellent job in enhancing our international reputation at all times, and he has not been involved in any matter relating to the system. He has acted entirely properly throughout, as is entirely characteristic of him. He is a man who is investing more energy than most people have in the experience he carved out for Gibraltar, not just more business and more wealth. He's carved out new industries and new markets, and he's achieving that and more. He enjoys my full and unadulterated confidence and that of all his cabinet colleagues. Everyone knows they have and expresses full confidence in the action and the efforts of the criminal prosecution in Gibraltar and the Attorney General in respect of this matter, as they have been dealing with it for some years, and are fully appraised of all the facts and issues relating to the assigned investigation and their interest, and all options have been considered during that time. This is a matter entirely in the hands of our law enforcement agencies. The government must also express its confidence in the decision of the Gibraltar Court and the application of the rule of law in court.
Just one question. I'm grateful for the very full answer that Chief Minister has given this matter, given the public interest in relation to the issues that are asked. My question relates to the French and Spanish authorities. Well known that both the French and Spanish authorities have rejected the argument put forward by Ms. Lafay in relation to the provenance of the funds, in relation to research, that the funds come from the Saudi royal family, in fact, they were a gift from the king himself. The natural follows, therefore, that the Gibraltar authorities that were cooperating quite clearly for some time now with the French and Spanish authorities have included clearly that I'd like to see Mr. Hudson with this particular question, that the Gibraltar authorities have accepted the argument by Mr. Rafael-Assad that the funds were as a gift from Italy rather than anywhere else.
I'm not able to tell you, Honourable Gentleman, whether the water authorities have accepted or detected, because it's a law of business matter, not a government matter. But I can tell you what the court decided. The court decided, to the extent of the assets in question, that the trustees have provided evidence in the court set out in paragraph 23 of its ruling, that the assets have not been acquired, either done with funds which the court believes have come to the federal union. Now, I have no knowledge of this case and of the information that the law enforcement agencies have in Gibraltar about assets in Gibraltar, or that the French law enforcement agencies have, or the Spanish law enforcement agencies have. But there are different monies, obviously. Some may come from one source, which is untainted, and some may come from a source that is tainted. The funding in respect of the matter in which the honourable members have asked, which justice is finding, which I think should give a very huge confidence, because he has looked at the documents, he has heard the evidence, and his finding, not the law enforcement agency, is that in Gibraltar, the assets in question were not acquired with funds, other than funds, the provenance of which could be ascribed. witness who made a decision based on the evidence before him on the day of the speaker. So my question was entirely directed at the law enforcement agency as opposed to the political question that's on the way.
Because in that case, it would not have been a question which I think is in order, and that would be one of the gentlemen clarified, because we cannot here answer questions about the investigations that law enforcement agents are carrying out or what evidence they have or don't have.
I have two supplementaries to the very most extensive and intricate answer provided, which I'm grateful for. Regarding money bags, Volta has been working for 13 years for the money bag evaluation. So the evaluation, as I understand, is due in the first quarter of 2019. So is the government, in light of this, not worried that given our sad assets have been frozen in Spain, France, and the UK, the latter under a European order, that this sort of thing is exactly what the Moneyval assessment will be looking for in terms of perhaps considering that the voter standards are seeming lower in the compliance side of things?
To bring with one other section up and on things, I must say to the other lady, because the Moneyval assessment has nothing to do with that. This is the acquisition of an asset scheme to Volta, which even the French authorities have not thought to do. They are the lead authority in respect of the investigation, and they are not seeking to freeze. They would have been able to seek to ask to freeze. And in the answer that I gave, I said to her, they would have been able even to seek to register their freeze of order here. They have come here. They have looked at everything our enforcement agents have. They have looked at all the evidence. They have written consistently for a number of years, and they have made the decision not to ask us to freeze. And the decision which I'm making to her, which is not our decision, and it's relating to what we have been informed of in order to deal with the decision in this house, has been that there is not evidence to take proceedings to freeze. Now, if the sense of thought that there was a reason why the money here was tainted, they would have frozen here by registration. It's an automatic thing. I think it would be dealt with very harshly by Landau if he went around freezing assets, which there is no evidence to prove, even when a lead authority that has all of the information necessary to prove other assets has come here, has cooperated with us, with continuing cooperation with them, and they're not asking us to prove, and they're not even registering their freezing order here, which is automatic. Money balances are completely separate, and we're very hard to ensure that when we finally have a money balance assessment, we possibly apply coverage, and that is about the privacy of the people in the Gibraltar financial services industry, the privacy of the people in the industry generally in Gibraltar who make reports about alleged money laundering. In this case, Mr. Speaker, there was a disclosure to the government in 1999. And the government made the decision to allow the budget. And when the issue of whether the money is tainted arises, and the asset is disclosed to the authorities of the pursuing those tainted assets, those authorities don't pursue the freezing. So I don't think the noble lady is backing up the right thing.
There's a number of questions, and I'll just mix them up because I don't intend to ignore any further other than this. You mentioned 1999 and 2000. My understanding is the government in 1999 and 2000 could not have blocked the sale of this particular property to Mr. Al-Assad, because in fact that was a transaction as between two private entities. What the government then could do, and it did do, was refuse Mr. Al-Assad an application for capital status. In other words, Mr. Al-Assad wants to come to Gibraltar, to be resident in Gibraltar, and that was refused in 1999-2000. And if we accept that there is a fundamental distinction, indeed, between the situation in 1999-2000 and the situation now, the position since 2013, that in 1999-2000, Mr. Al-Assad was being accepted with investments, was being accepted all over Europe. He had investments in France, he had investments in Spain, he had investments, I think, in Switzerland, in England, indeed. The Dallas paragraph recalled that right up to 2011, he was resident in a £13 million, I think, mansion in Mayfair. It was in 2012
which you have 2012-13, which you have specifically scripted, but do relate historically to some of the status of conduct when he was in Syria and the source of his work as to whether it's to do with the plundering of the Syrian people. You then have proceedings in France, you then have specific proceedings in Spain in order of the French proceedings, and you then have proceedings in the United Kingdom in aid of the French proceedings. And one of the two reasons why it's different. Looking at this transaction, it does appear as if when we stand back and we look at this, that the price that has been paid for this particular asset, there appears to be a mistake on the part of Mr. Al-Assad in the federal actual cut price to bear and obviously the jurisdiction. And I wonder whether there has been any indication by any of those jurisdictions that I have mentioned about the possibility of inquiry in relation to that transaction from Mr. Al-Assad, sorry, from Mr. Al-Assad, and any indication that any type of action might possibly be a decision in the future.
For the speaker, I must say, he wouldn't expect me to answer that question, would he? He wouldn't expect me to answer a question about what law enforcement agents may be thinking of doing. And if I didn't know better, I would think he was trying to raise the specter of a sort that is not logical. Because for the leading counsel to interpret the rules of parliament, to turn to alignment, to ask a supplementary question about what law enforcement agencies may be about to do in respect of alleged potential persons of crime is frankly not something that would merit serious consideration. Second, we're dealing with what is possible. And the second is that the consent could not be denied to the transaction. It could not be prevented from coming in. Well, the information I have is that Mr. Assad sought consent. Even consent was not required. And consent was not granted, he was told that he needed no consent. If someone comes and tells you, can I do this? He will open himself up for you to say, well, I at least would not like to do this. Even if you can. He says that might have taken a different decision in that case. But he was not told that, and in that case, true, at that time, there was no issue of the sort of that I had, but the issues were there. The representative was not Germany in 2012. The issue of two persons of crime legislation and the ability to free arose in 2012. The history was well known by them. The UN report was well known by them. I don't think that you can wither off the 99 books so easily. And then, please, the professor did not attend the Council of State in the data. And I commend the Chief Minister who made that decision. The normal judgment has mischaracterized the reality of the price being paid as set out in the judgment. I think the judgment actually set out quite explicitly what the valuation is and how the sale is entirely in keeping with the valuation. In just referring to the fact, it's missing a bit in the valuation that says that there's an assumption of an outstanding debt of $10.5 million to Casino, which means that the total price is well within, I think, about what the valuation suggests it should be. So there doesn't appear to be a financial aspect to this. But all I am going to defend in this house is the judgment of the Chief Justice, who prepared the documents and who made all the decisions, which you can ask court to make in the context of the application made, and the relationship between the Gibraltar Authority and the French Authority, and the deep cooperation that has been between them, and literally, my view is to the probity of the Honourable Mr. Isola, has set out by the wisdom and respect of the work that he does, and the support that he enjoys from Honourable members on this side of the House, which I dare say, with Honourable members' stock and thought, they would wish to clarify
I don't think any of us on this side are speaking to impeach any. I mean, I've never spoken to anybody, but I think we're talking about processes being followed accordingly and correctly. So I don't think anybody's out to impeach anybody's reputation personally. If I can just ask, despite the Chief Minister correctly noting that this plan came into the GST in the GST years, so we say, the issue of ongoing monitoring, which is part of Section 12 of the Proceeds of Crimes Act, it shows that there is a process for ongoing monitoring. So, this is something that has to be legally abided by. So, the Chief Minister then accepts that ongoing monitoring is as significant and pertinent as letting the individual in despite monitoring.
Of course, I didn't speak about why you considered what I said. I referred her to the fact that the Gibraltar police and the Gibraltar Office of Criminal Prosecution have been in contact with the French authorities for some time, I think now for a number of years. That's what the ongoing monitoring produces, Mr. Speaker. And that's why it's not that this issue rules out. When the Honourable Lady, who is the one leading on this subject, says this is a press release and then puts a question, or it appears in a newspaper, that is the result of many years of work already done in respect of the Office of Criminal Prosecution. By meeting with the French authorities, was either a year or 2 years before then. We amended the Proceeds of Crime Act, Mr. Speaker, with a specific advertisement sometime last year with the support of members of the in great measure to assist further in respect of this matter. So, the ongoing monitoring was going on. That's the result of the ongoing monitoring. The work, which is unseen, but which is excellent work of the Office of Criminal Prosecutions and the Office of the Attorney General, in establishing those strong links with other prosecuting authorities, which went on for years before they thought that it was worth asking the 12 questions about this week.
Just one, and I ask this question in good faith because you know, the Chief Minister may have said something that I'm not sure that she intended. She said that the statute was amended last year in large measure because of this case. What do you mean because of inquiries that were made in relation to this case? Or does it mean in order to sit generally in cases of this nature and other cases, but it wasn't brought to Parliament specifically because of this case, because that would then open up another avenue in terms of questions. And so we think that that would assist the jurisdiction somehow. What I said very advisedly, I said that we brought an amendment to the Proceeds of Crime Act, which they supported in great measure in relation to this case. And I think that is explicit. I move at the House to adjourn to tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. The House will now adjourn to tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the afternoon.